Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Spoken Heard. I'm Susan Dobie Chase, and today I'm thrilled to bring you Miss Gina Loring from Los Angeles, California. How are you, Gina?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you.
Oh, you're more than welcome. It's a great, great honor for me to have you here today. You've done so much, and you're such an incredibly talented artist that I have been looking so forward to this. You just need to know.
Oh, thank you.
I was hoping that maybe I could get you to talk a little about what's coming up this next week or in the next short time. I know that you have some dates and events that are going on that you wanted to make sure that you got out there on the air. So please feel free to just begin with that.
Sure. Well, here in Los Angeles, the Skirball is hosting an event on March 4th, and it's actually called March 4th, F-O-R. TH, kind of a play on words, and it's a night of female empowerment. So it's a bunch of female artists, a bunch of women poets and performers, and we're all going to be showcasing our work and sharing. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be at the Skirball here in LA, which will be a really nice event. And I'm looking forward to seeing the other women who are performing as well, and being inspired by their work. So that's coming up. And then I'm also going out to Denver. I'm a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated, and they have graciously asked me to come and be their keynote speaker and performer for an event that they're having coming up in a few weeks. So I'm kind of in and out doing various gigs, and then I also teach. I work with teenagers in prison. In juvenile hall, teaching creative writing workshops here in LA, and I also teach it at community colleges, English literature as well. So I've kind of like I wear multiple hats as you do as an artist.
Wow, well, I really love that you're involved in all of that and getting other people into the things that you find so important in your own life. Do you know who any of the other women who are performing at that the first venue that you talked about will be?
Yeah, let me look it up actually to make sure that I don't miss anyone. So actually, let's just do that maybe towards the end of the show,
that's
and that way I have a minute
perfect.
to look that's up the flyer.
Okay, and I don't know if it's too much to ask while you're doing that right now to have you read something just to get us involved in hearing your work. I know there are some people who are really looking forward to that and others who should be introduced before we talk further.
Sure. So this is a piece, it's called The Revolution Is You, and it's after Gil Scott-Heron. So a couple of years ago, we did a program for him to honor his life and his work here in LA. It was part of the Grand Performances series. And so there was a group of us, various Los Angeles-based poets and musicians, and we wrote and performed to honor him. So this is my offering, and it's based off of his poem, "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised." The revolution is a single mother, three kids, two jobs, one prayer. It is Sojourner Truth, Joan of Arc, and Frida Kahlo meeting clandestine by candlelight. Betty Shabazz, Merle Evers, Coretta Scott King, up sleepless nights. It is labor. We release you from our bodies, trusting the moon to watch over you. It is Trayvon Martin walking home in the rain. Eric Garner's final breath. Tamir Rice, Amadou Diallo, Sean Bell, Emmett Till, Mike Brown. It is the sound of 1,000 broken hearts, more than one poem could ever hold. Mothers burying their babies is unnatural, ungodly, like bigotry, like bullets. The revolution knows the underbelly of all that is broken and bare, understands. We must uncloak ourselves and be made again of spun light. Reroute this blood in divine alignment. Live out loud. Make of this life a river of stars unleashed. Speak. We must not be distracted by complacency, pop culture, trickery. The revolution is not a mainstream, consumer-based, funded event, not sponsored by Nike or Nokia, not a reality show. It is reality where men in power are not held accountable for unspeakable behavior, where women are demonized for telling the truth, where money buys silence, buys loyalty, buys bodies, where every black male is a suspect and every cop has impunity, where communities live in a chronic state of loss, where the prison industrial complex legally enslaves black and brown, where children wake up in war zones, poor people killing poor people, poor people killing poor people, poor people killing poor people, killing poor people, killing poor people, killing poor people. Look up. Death lullabies rattle the clouds. Be witness. The revolution isn't each shot fired, each bomb shattering the sky open. The revolution is action. It is daring to live anyway. Look the demon in the eye and sucker punch that motherfucker with a poem, because the revolution will not wait, not come at your convenience. There is no rewinding, no fast-forwarding, no time-traveling. There is only now. Only now, only now. The revolution is now. The revolution is here. The revolution is now. The revolution is here. The revolution is now. The revolution is here. The revolution is you.
Wow, just gave me goosebumps. I'm not even kidding. That was great. That was amazing. Yeah, Gil Scott-Heron has inspired so many different writers and so many beautiful things. I know that you are active in human rights circles, et cetera, and I admire so much where this must have come from. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Where in your life did this find its home?
How I started writing.
Like, where did it come from? How did you find this as inspiration?
I started writing poetry when I was a teenager, and I was just going through a really rough chapter, and I wasn't happy, and it was a place for me to put that energy. So I just kind of started journaling. And I didn't necessarily set out to write poems. I just sort of wrote my thoughts and my ideas and my frustrations and, you know, just sort of the inner workings of my spirit at that time. It just naturally came out with a certain rhythm. So it really came from a necessity to process and understand myself. You know, it was very cathartic. It was just kind of almost like a therapeutic tool for me. And then, and then when I was in college, I started going to open mics. And that's kind of when I was introduced to this whole other world of spoken word. And when I graduated, I went to Spelman College in Atlanta. And when I graduated and moved back home to LA, back in L.A., I started going to the Poetry Lounge, which is one of the largest spoken word venues, I think, in the country, certainly in Southern California. And that sort of became my poetry home as far as reading regularly on the mic and being inspired by other poets and just becoming part of a community, you know, a circle of writers. So it really came out of, you know, it came out of necessity to be heard and to just to communicate, you know, what I was thinking and feeling. And then beyond myself, you know, initially it was kind of my own personal challenges and issues that I was writing about. But then ultimately it became an extension of a larger voice, you know, where I started to speak about, you know, larger issues and political themes and things that I saw happening in the world that I wanted to give voice to. And, you know, it's like it's just things where I realized, well, I have an opinion about that. So I think I'm going to say it out loud. Here go.
Yeah. And it takes a little while, I think, for people who are very young to grow into saying that, who aren't in the spoken word community. But there are so many young people that are empowered that way, you know, to be able to speak your mind, to be able to bring forth all the energy that you have about things that are important to you. I think that kids that start out or young adults who start out in spoken word often grow into that and find so much freeing in that sense of being able to talk about, you know, who they are and what they believe in at a time when they're still discovering the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
I just wanted to, for the listeners, I just wanted to mention that the Poetry Lounge that Gina was just speaking of, we had Shihan on a few weeks ago, and he's one of the founders of the Poetry Lounge in the Los Angeles area.
Mm-hmm.
So, Gina, I know that, you know, kind of making this transition between you and your young age and then what you do at prisons and with kids who are incarcerated, how did you get started doing that, and what does that mean to you? Why do you keep doing it?
Well, I got involved with Inside Out Writers is the name of the organization that I work with, and I got involved with them when I was in graduate school. So I was getting my master's in creative writing, and as part of the program, I went to Antioch University, LA, which is very progressive. It's a very progressive school, and they have a lot of focus on activism. And
mm-hmm.
so as part of the program, in order to graduate, you had to do some kind of outreach, community service, some kind of work that somehow tied into your work as a writer.
Yeah.
And so I was able to use that opportunity, was kind of the introduction to working with Inside Out Writers. But I had been wanting to work with incarcerated youth for a long time, so it was a perfect opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I always just think, you know, there but by the grace of God go I.
Right.
I wasn't incarcerated as a teenager, but I was at boarding school, which in no way would I compare that to jail, because I now have spent a lot of time, you know, with the kids in jail, and I see the conditions, and so I would never compare it because you know the conditions were much better. But I do understand what it feels like to be isolated and to be to feel kind of like you're just on your own at a very young age. And to not have family support and not have, you know, consistent, healthy role models and folks who you feel supported by and guided by. And I know what that feels like. And just, you know, that could have been me. It really could be all of us. You know, the teenagers who are in prison, are coming from, many of them are coming out of foster care. They're coming from situations where they just oftentimes were in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they didn't have the support and the guidance that and the nurturing that all human beings need to
yeah.
succeed. So there's really no difference between them and me or you or anyone. And same thing for specifically, I also work with Nola Brantley, is an activist and a woman who created a nonprofit, and she works with teenage girls who are coming out of sex trafficking. So I've also worked with her organization. We have retreats for them once a year, working with the girls. And it's the same thing. There but by the grace of God go I. There's no difference between me and these girls who are coming out of these horrific experiences.
Yes.
I don't know. I feel like as human beings, it's interesting. It's like we're all individuals, and we all have free will, you know, and we're all on our own path. And so in a sense, we're not responsible for anyone but ourselves. But then at the same time, I feel like we are responsible for each other, because we are, you know, connected. We're all here on this planet. And
right.
so I feel like if I'm in a position to in any way be helpful to something that I feel called to do, then it's important that I follow that voice and that energy that tells me that that's what I should be doing. So, you know, I think my life would be very different if I had had a mentor or someone who could have given me some guidance earlier, you know, at that in that time of my life. So if I can do that for one of them, then that's my honor.
Yes. Well, that's wonderful. And you know, dare I say noble for you to continue on that path and to inspire kids, especially since you can relate to it through your own experience. And I know you said that it's yours was different and you had much better conditions, but still that initial feeling of the loss of mentorship, of not knowing who's going to be your security blanket in the very end, know, to share that with other kids who are feeling it, and to become almost like a mentor for them in a strange way, you know, like someone who opens doors and says, yes, you can. Yes, you can. Amazing. Good work, Gina. Good work. And I'm so impressed. Go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to say also just introducing young folks to finding their voices through writing is also something mm-hmm. that, you know, and in that way it's not, I'm just a channel, you know, it's not like I'm doing anything. I'm just saying, hey, you could write down your feelings and your thoughts, and that can feel a lot better than having them just sort of living inside of you. And sometimes, you know, it then becomes toxic if you don't get it out. So it's also an opportunity to introduce them to something that hopefully will be helpful, you know, for them moving forward. They've actually done tests, and kids who participate in art programs, whether it's creative writing workshops or painting, drawing, things of that nature, that they fight less. Like because so many the kids are, you know, the kids are unhappy and in pain, so they fight.
Right.
You know, that's what happens. You know, and they're in fucked up conditions. So what else are you going to do but take it out on the people who are around you? And so it's very common in juvenile hall, you know, and in prisons for people to be fighting all the time. And they've actually, you know, shown that people who are participating in creative expression, that those fights, the numbers of those fights go down.
Do they read to each other? After they've written, do they inspire that in each other and find solace in the fact that there are other people who are also feeling sort of the same pain that they are?
Yeah, I always incorporate that as part of my classes. So at the end of the class, it's kind of like an open mic, like whoever wants to share what they wrote can. And absolutely, mm-hmm. that can be something that's very, you know, inspirational for you know, for them to hear someone to hear some of their own story spoken in someone else's voice. You know, it feels,
yeah.
You know, you feel like you're not alone. So I always encourage them to read what they wrote, but mm-hmm. it's up to them. I believe in a no pressure environment. So if they don't feel like reading, they don't feel like sharing, they don't have to. But it's nice when they do, and then you see the connection, you see how it resonates. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I was going to say that I'm also really, really impressed by the fact that you went to Spelman, first of all, and then Antioch. What two wonderful universities to have to your credit. And we're more than halfway through the interview at this point. I was hoping I could prevail upon you to read another piece.
Sure. This is called Color Free. With all due respect to the ancestors, I have decided to uncloak myself of heritage and be made of spun light. I will be a river, flowing in the four directions, every spirit beckoning me to remember I am not this body. Grown from a line of sharecroppers, trail of tears walkers, Chitlin Circuit showstoppers, concentration camp survivors, witness to and performers of miracles, sea parting prophets, burning bushes, levitating meditators, Paramahansa Yogananda, Harriet Tubman, Dalai Lama, without planetary confinement, race, doctrine, alignment, gender, color, class, assignment, I resign. Turn in my papers. My freedom needs no proof or validation. I am whole right here, right now. I am whole right here, right now. This my mantra, this my song. When asked my ethnicity and gender on applications and paperwork, I will attach this poem with a note saying, please see attached poem. I am a river. There's no box for that.
Beautiful. Again, you know, giving you the freedom to be who you want to be. And I see that coming to you so much in all of your work. Do you get asked about your ethnicity a lot?
Yes.
Yes, I would assume so. Because, you know, you're absolutely gorgeous, but sort of ethnic ambiguity there that I think is probably what makes you so very lovely, in a sense, certainly not that's all of it. But I would guess that you get asked that a lot and that's an honest reaction to the asking. the other thing is that, you know, given that there are so many different multitudes inside all of us, you know, according to Walt Whitman and everyone's experiences, I love that you were able to go out and, as a guest artist of the American Embassy, perform all over the world, Kuwait, Russia, West Africa, Denmark, Turkey, Greece, Ireland, England, and Tunisia. What did you learn about yourself and about your writing or anything else by being able to get out in the world and perform for people of different cultures?
Well, it absolutely has been a huge blessing and definitely informed my work and my growth and just the way that I see the world. Traveling just expands your horizons in ways that I don't think can happen just from reading about a place or watching a movie about it, but actually being physically in new environments is really enriching. I think, I don't know, I mean, I've done a lot of work in terms of thinking outside of kind of the way that we're programmed in society to look at people by gender, by color, by language. There's all these dividing lines when in essence, you know, I believe that we're all, you know, we're all energy, we're all spirit sparks, you know, inhabiting bodies in this incarnation at this specific time on the planet, but really, you know, we're so much more. This is just sort of a temporary reality. So I think that it's really important to embrace heritage and embrace culture and to, you know, acknowledge that certainly it matters in the way that people are treated differently. But then also to take it a step further beyond that. So that's kind of what where the poem comes from, is a sense of like, okay, cool, I'm going to acknowledge and identify and honor all of who I am. But then I'm going to take it a step further beyond that and say, okay, cool, now that I've done that, who am I really, though, beyond that? And really embracing that spirit spark, and trying to live from that consciousness and that awareness. And then when you do that, when I travel, you know, there's no difference. It kind of, you know, ties back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, there, but by the grace of God go I. The flip side of that is I am everywhere. Like, we are all connected. We are all, you know, made of the same star stuff. And and once you kind of have that awareness, I feel at home everywhere that I've traveled, you know, because I feel like, you know, that's the main thing that stands out to me in all of the countries that I've been to, is the distinct similarity of human beings, the human heart, the human need for witness. You know, like the teenagers who I did poetry workshops with in Kuwait were the exact same as the teenagers who I worked with in Russia or in England or in Denmark or in West Africa. You know, there's just a need to be heard. And I also am fortunate that, you know, and I acknowledge that because I am, as you said, racially ambiguous, I travel freely, you know, and that's actually I have another poem recently that I wrote after Sandra Bland, just really acknowledging that, you know, it's very different to look like me, to be a racially ambiguous Black person versus someone who is identifiably Black. Our walks are very different in the way that we're treated. And so just acknowledging that. So I also acknowledge that I've had really, really wonderful, warmly embraced, lovely experiences in all of my travels. But I'm also aware that does have something to do with the way that I look, because I don't know that I would have been able to just walk through the airport, you know, travel around various universities, meeting all kinds of folk, you know, and never had any issues. And so I want to acknowledge that, because I know that that's also part of why my experiences have been so, you know, I can just kind of blend in anywhere that I go. But I also think that it's a gift in that, you know, the students who I work with, really doesn't matter where I am, they can identify with me and I can identify with them. So it's been really a huge blessing, all of the traveling experiences that I've had, and also to see that transformative energy of poetry. You know, just watching people come out of their shells and find their voices and feel empowered, get on a mic and speak their truth. You know, it's really it's wonderful to watch people discover that for themselves, you know.
How do you get through all the language barriers that must be present and all? Because you've traveled to so many different places, and virtually every place on this list has a different language that they speak. I imagine that's difficult.
Actually, most other countries, they speak multiple languages. It's really just here that we kind of, you know, English is the primary language, but almost every country that I went to, the students, they were learning English in school along with whatever their various other languages that they spoke were. So, like, for example, in West Africa, my students spoke, like, 6 to 7 languages because you have English, you have French, you know, depending on which country colonized, and then they have, you know, various tongues of native languages. And and then same thing in Kuwait. They spoke English, but they also spoke you know, various other languages and different dialects of different languages. So I was really humbled and impressed by the fact that these, you know, 14, 15, 16 year olds could speak 6, 7 languages. I think the only place where I needed an interpreter was in Turkey. When I was in Turkey, I had an interpreter. So when that's the case, then you know, someone can be hired to help with that language barrier. But even then, you know, I mean, it sounds corny, but, you know, a smile is universal. So as long as I walk in there with a smile, you know, as long as the vibration is positive and friendly, then it's like it doesn't really matter if we're speaking different languages.
You know, we're coming up to the end of the show, and I want to give you the opportunity to have us read out on your work. But I just wanted to say that there's so much more. She's a lyricist, ladies and gentlemen. She's worked with De La Soul and the Brand New Heavies, and is doing something with the Vagina Monologues creator, Eve Ensler. And there's just so much that's going on. Please look for Gina Loring's name in the near future, because she's going to be around the world and around the corner and around everywhere. So please pay attention to that. And I would just like to thank you, Gina, for being our guest this week, and to let everyone know to be kind to one another until we meet again. And here we go, Gina Loring.
My pleasure. And my website is ginaloring.com. GINALORING.com, and I'm looking at the March 4th flyer right now. It's Denise Froman, Ariana, Lady Bosco, the Get Lit Players, Ariel Dean Band, and then myself at the Skirball Cultural Center here in LA on March 4th. So I'm sorry, you wanted me to read one last poem?
Yes, please.
Is that what we're doing? Okay, so this is called Passing. I was born in a body that does not announce. I'm invisible. In airports and malls, no one follows me. I am a walking secret. Assimilate without trying, a blended girl, blending in effortlessly. If I am stopped, I will not be arrested, let alone murdered in a jail cell, a sickening luxury, genetic lottery, painful kind of privilege. Fear-based favoritism, facial features that hold life and death in the balance. I am a reflection of colonization, rape, and resilience. Look how my skin looks almost like them. But I am them, and you too. The difference is, I remember, there are no mistakes in my making. Who am I, questioning God's divine decisions made long before my birth or burden? I am not half of anything. There is nothing but what is underneath. We are all just beating hearts.
This is Spoken Heard. I'm Susan Dobie Chase. Please tune in next week. And until then, be kind to one another.